translation. Lord Sri Krishna, who manifested his eternal form before the vision of all on the earth, performed his disappearance by removing his form from the sight of those who were unable to see him as he is due to not executing required penance. Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. In this verse, the word Abhitripta Drisham is most significant. The conditioned souls in the material world are all trying to satisfy their senses in various ways, but they have failed to do so because it is impossible to be satisfied by such efforts. The example of the fish on land is very appropriate. If one takes a fish from the water and puts it on the land, it cannot be made happy by any amount of offered pleasure. The spirit soul can be happy only in the association of the Supreme Living Being, the Personality of Godhead, and nowhere else. The Lord, by His unlimited causeless mercy, has innumerable Vaikuntha planets in the Brahmajyoti sphere of the spiritual world. And in that transcendental world, there is an unlimited arrangement for the unlimited pleasure of the living entities. The Lord Himself comes to display His transcendental pastimes typically represented at Vrindavan, Mathura, and Dwarka. He appears just to attract the conditioned souls back to Godhead, back home to the eternal world. But for want of sufficient piety, the onlookers are not attracted by such pastimes of the Lord. In Bhagavad Gita, it is said that only those who have completely surpassed the way of sinful reaction can engage themselves in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. The entire Vedic way of ritualistic performances is to put every conditioned soul on the path of piety. By strict adherence to the prescribed principles for all orders of social life, one can attain the qualities of truthfulness, control of the mind, control of the senses, forbearance, etc., and can be elevated to the plane of rendering pure devotional service to the Lord. Only by such a transcendental vision are one's material hankerings fully satisfied. When the Lord was present, persons who were able to satisfy their material hankerings by seeing Him in true perspective were thus able to go back with Him to His kingdom. But those persons who are unable to see the Lord as He is remained attached to material hankerings and were not able to go back home, back to Godhead. When the Lord passed beyond the vision of all, He did so in His original eternal form, as stated in this verse. The Lord left in His own body. He did not leave His body, as is generally misunderstood by the conditioned souls. This statement defeats the false propaganda of the faithless non-devotees that the Lord passed away like an ordinary conditioned soul. The Lord appeared in order to release the world from the undue burden of the non-believing Asuras, and after doing this, He disappeared from the world's eyes. Hare Krishna. So I've been asked to speak as a run-up to the Janmashtami, and today, of course, about the Lord's disappearance. Appearance, disappearance are sometimes said to be the same, all part of the Lord's blissful pastimes. So this section of the Bhagavatam is entitled Remembrance of Lord Krishna. It is Sri Uddhava speaking to Vidura when Vidura went on pilgrimage, and he's explaining in brief. He gives him a very brief encapsulation of the Lord's entire pastimes. So here he's saying that the Lord disappeared from the sight of those who were unable to see Him due to not executing required penance. And Srila Prabhupada, in the very beginning of the purport, picks up on one particular word, compound, Avitripta Drisham. And he says, this is most significant. And Avitripta Drisham in the verse is translated as without fulfillment of vision. And he goes on to explain that this is the situation in the material world for the conditioned souls. That essentially everyone in this world is looking for fulfillment, looking for something that will fulfill them. And it's actually a vain search because nothing can, as far as this world is concerned. Whatever we acquire, whatever we achieve, whatever we accomplish, however successful we are, that we manage to become wealthy, famous, whatever it is, that we aspire for, our dreams, live the dream, we may accomplish that, but we'll still be dissatisfied. We won't achieve the fulfillment of our vision, Avitripta Drisham. Something will be missing in the heart. And that's being explained here as being Krishna. The fulfillment of the vision actually is the Lord. What we're looking for, without necessarily realizing it in many cases, of course here, everyone has understood that. But the conditioned souls in general, are seeking for something, they don't know what it is, but it's Krishna. Everyone follows my path in all respects, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita. And here it's being, being explained in a nice philosophical way that, the conditioned souls are trying to satisfy their senses, but they do not succeed. And Prabhupada gives the example of fish out of the water. So if you take a fish out of the water, you can make it very comfortable, put it in a nice bed, bring it all kinds of delectable foods, and whatever. It can become a very famous fish, very popular fish, but it's going to die. It's going to flap around. Oh, just put me back in the water. That's what I want. You know, so that's all that will actually satisfy it. So similarly, the soul here, forgetful of who we are, in complete illusion, identifying with the body and the external environment, we try to satisfy ourselves by grasping at so many things. But exactly like that fish, we simply flap around hopelessly, and not really knowing what's going wrong. Something's not working. So then we make another plan. This time I'll succeed. But again, frustrated and thwarted in our endeavors. And of course, that will go on forever. It actually, in the Gita, is explained like that, that chintama aparimeyam, pralayantam upasri, up until the point of death, constantly experiencing anxiety, trying to satisfy the senses which can never be satisfied, the asha pasha, so they're bound up. Then it's impossible that there's no limit. The sense desires, the more we try to satisfy them, the more they become inflamed and desirous of further gratification. But the fulfillment is found when we see Krishna. And I was reminded as I read the purport, of course, of the example of Dhruva Maharaj, who had a similar aspiration, as we know. He wanted to acquire the entire universe. Having been slighted by his father, he thought, okay, let me achieve something greater than him. But his father was the emperor of the entire Bharatvarsh, so he had to get something greater than that. So he went and performed so much penance, and then finally gained a vision of the Lord, upon which he said famously this verse, avrittam jnanam etena jnanino nityavairina kamarupena No, he said this one. Stana bilasi tapasi. Sorry, I'm reading from the Gita there. Yes, stana bilasi tapasi. I've performed so much tapa in order to achieve the my aims. Stana bilasi tapasi stitoham. Praptavan deva munindraguyam. Kacham vichinvan api divya ratnam. And what have I achieved? Now, having sought something which he compares to a piece of glass, Divya Ratnam, I have in fact acquired this wonderful divine jewel in the shape of your darshan, that having seen the Lord, he became completely satisfied. Svamin kritato smi varam nayache, that last line, Prabhupada frequently quotes that. I think this is from the Narak Pancharatra. Yes, Svamin Kritato Smi Varam Nayache. So the fulfillment of vision, which is being described in this verse, was achieved by Dhruva, who managed to see Lord Vishnu. Lord Vishnu appeared before him. And then he realized that, well, everything I was wanting in comparison to this is just like a piece of broken glass. It's like a bauble. And now this is Divya Ratnam. This is this divine, priceless gem of seeing Krishna. So that's what we are really looking for. And Krishna came to show himself and to show us what we're looking for in the shape of his personality. That is actually what the soul hankers for. And he came displaying his pastimes, but here it said that, and that is the fulfillment of vision, but unfortunately, due to want of sufficient piety, people did not recognize him, did not understand who he was. Even though Krishna is personally standing in front of you, if you don't have the piety, the pious credits, then you won't be able to understand who he is. And of course, there's so many examples in Krishna's pastimes of persons who didn't surrender, who didn't understand Krishna's divine position, who were not attracted to him due to this lack of piety. And Srila Prabhupada, in the purport, alludes to it. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is said that only those who have completely surpassed the way of sinful reaction can engage themselves in the loving service of the Lord. And so that's a reference to the seventh chapter, Yesham Tantakatam Papam, Jananam Punya Karmanam. So unless we have Punya Karmana, Jananam, in many births, actually, Te Dvanva Mohanir Muktam Bhajanti Mam Dridavrataha, that Dridavrata for bhajan, for serving Krishna, doesn't arise because of the lack of piety. So that piety is required. And of course, in the case of Dhruva, he accumulated so much of it in 6 months. He performed intense austerities with his mind focused on the Lord, chanting Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So, he was able to see Krishna in such a short time. But for most of us, we're struggling with that. It's the attachments for material enjoyment. And as I was saying previously, forgetfulness of who we really are. So what we're seeking is coming out through the false ego and of thinking I'm this body. So even though we're looking for that bliss, that nectar of Divya Ratna, that divine jewel of Krishna's vision, in ignorance and thinking that I am this body, we're looking for it in the wrong place. We're trying to find happiness through so many material things, which, again, never satisfy us. And as that attachment remains in the heart, Bhogashvarya Prashaktanam Tayaparita Chaitasam Samadho Navadiyate. So we don't we don't form that fixed resolution, that determination to achieve Krishna, to see Krishna. So Kamsa, of course, was a very perfect example of that. We're going to be hearing about him over the next couple of days as we remember Krishna's pastimes. He was able to see Krishna face to face, but he couldn't surrender. Why? Because he was so attached and so desirous of bhoga, of enjoyment in this world. Even though it was made abundantly clear that who Krishna was for Kamsa. Kamsa, of course, he was a demon in his previous life, Kalanimi. And he got the darshan of Vishnu in that life as well. Vishnu took his head off. And then he's taking birth again, coming as Kamsa. And then the enmity is still there in his heart. And why does one become an enemy of God? Why should we be an enemy of God? God is the most wonderful person. He's so kind. He's gentle. He's beautiful. He's unlimitedly opulent. He wants to share it with us. He wants to give us everything. He loves us. He will never forsake us. It doesn't matter what we do. We can say anything. We can do anything. He won't leave us. He never forgets us for a single moment. We forget him. Why would we become his enemy? It doesn't make any sense. But we want to enjoy his opulences. This is the problem. Because of complete ignorance and complete forgetfulness of who we are. So Kamsa's like that. He typifies this mentality. And it's made very clear that Krishna's God. So he hears the he hears the prophecy that you will die by the hand of the eighth child of Devaki, and then from that moment he's gripped with this fear: what may happen? Because those who are materialistic and attached to the body and who very much identify with the body fear death. Death will be the end of all their hopes and dreams and everything. So they're very fearful of that. And Kamsa was no exception. So he begins to make all kinds of plans. And as we know, he begins to dispatch his various henchmen and demons to search out this eighth child. At first, he's not really sure. But gradually, reports are coming back about how one demon after another is being killed by this boy in Vrindavan. And then the penny begins to drop. Maybe this is the one. And these were not like ordinary demons. When we read the Krishna book, they're very quickly dealt with. Like the demons, Krishna summarily disposes of them so quickly that we don't think it's nothing. It's just a duck. It's just a bull. Or a horse. But no, these were celestial demons. They were powerful, so powerful they terrorized the gods. And actually, for example, the Arista was the bull, right? And it's described how he came to Vrindavan and he was so immense, like he had a cloud hanging over him. So just imagine, and he thundered in, and he begins to bellow tremendously, and the sound of his bellowing was so immense, there was like cracks of thunder, like thousands of cracks. Everyone was deafened. Right there, what's that? This thing is outside Vrindavan, emitting these huge sounds, and tearing up the earth, And then it's described how he sort of like, with his horn, he uprooted a mountain and just tossed it. So, this is not an ordinary bull, this is like massive, enormous demon. And he's, comes to Vrindavan, and he's just the sound of his bellowing causes the pregnant ladies to have miscarriages, and people are fainting and everything. But of course, Krishna, casually saunters up to him, And as we know, you know, he's like, actually, some fight took place there for a little while. It's like, but, you know, obviously in the end, Krishna just grabs him by the horns and throws him and it kills him, it pounds him and beats him, and he kills this beast. So the point I'm trying to make here, of course, is that this is not an ordinary demon, and none of them were. Prahlambasura is like 16 miles, I think it was he 16 miles high when he runs off with Balaram, and then he assumes his own form. His form is 16 miles, two yojanas. Or Trinavata carried Krishna 10,000 yojanas into outer space. That's 80,000 miles. So, you know, these are tremendous creatures, and Krishna's just like one after another, just killing them. And the Acharyas don't really focus on that very greatly because they're much more concerned about the rasa, the thing that really is important in Krishna's pastimes is the exchange of love, the beautiful, wonderful pastimes between Krishna and his devotees, and the loving exchanges and the nuances of the different types of relationships that are there. Each day, every single day, he would kill one demon, maybe two, depending if there was time after lunch. it's just dealt with quickly, but I'm just saying that Kamsa, you know, they were all his ministers, you know, he assembled them all around him, and in the beginning he'd sort of gone out and conquered the world and beaten up all these various demons himself. He was much, very mighty, more powerful than them, each of them. And they'd become his servants. And then he was hearing, you know, that Arista was beaten to death by Krishna, who's sort of like 8 years old or something. It's just a boy. And he's like, oh, what the... You know, so it should be very clear. And then Keshi, and then so many of them, one after another, Trinavata, Pralamba, doesn't matter who, they all meet the same fate. And then finally Narad comes and tells him, well, yes, actually, the eighth child is now living in Vrindavan, that you know, you were tricked by Vasudev and so many things. But still he refuses to accept. He's completely incapable of surrendering. It crosses his mind. He thinks, well, maybe I should, perhaps the best thing would be to surrender to Krishna at this point in time. But how can I do that? I'm a powerful king. He's just a boy. It just wouldn't be right. You know, they think, well, I know what I should do. I'll go to Vrindavan and I'll just kill all the residents of Vrindavan. That'll settle it, because then he'll die of grief. And he thought, but I'm too scared. I can't even go out of the house. Because what if the boy deals with me in the same way as all these other demons, you know? So all these just like conflicting thoughts are going through his head, like, you know, how to deal with the situation here. And he's, you know, throughout all of it, it never really occurs to him that if I surrender to Krishna, that actually will be in my best interests. And everything will be fine. And I'll be happy. Because he's Bhogaishwarya Prashaktanam. You know, he's completely attached to enjoyment. And this is the impediment that prevents us from surrendering. Because, actually, we're not the enjoyers. Krishna's the enjoyer. And that's a bit of a problem for people who want to enjoy this world. That the situation is that, you know, Krishna is in fact the enjoyer, and we're the enjoyed. He's actually the controller, and we're the controlled. He's the proprietor, and we're the owned. He's the owner, and we're owned by him. Everything. He owns us, our bodies, our life. Whatever we have completely belongs to Krishna. And whatever we acquire belongs to him. And it's meant for his pleasure. But if we have the Kamsa-like mentality, then we have issues with that. Why shouldn't I just have a little bit of pleasure? I can just enjoy some of this energy for myself. And thus we do not surrender. So this is the thing that we have to deal with. I quoted this verse, Avritam Gyan Etena Gyanino Nitya Vairina Kama Rupena Kanteya Dushpure Nanalena Cha. So Nitya Vairina Kama Rupena. So it's our enemy. Actually, this lust to enjoy that we have is described by Krishna as our eternal enemy in the Gita, in the third chapter. Because why is it our enemy? Because it's making us God's enemy. He's making God our enemy because he's actually not our enemy. He is our friend. And that is where the fulfillment of our vision will be found. And that's where we'll be happy. But because of this karma rupena, which burns like fire and is never satisfied, dushpare nanalena cha, we don't surrender. And we try to emulate God's position in this world with the inevitable result of failure, frustration, because we don't understand who we really are. We meet with defeat, always with defeat. Even if we externally appear successful, we know. Sadly, another greatly successful person recently took his own life, and it's increasingly the case that, you know, that they achieved everything, and someone might be thinking now, my career's just starting, perhaps I can, you know, but just wait a minute, stop, think, look, here's a person who, you know, set off on that path and reached the end and achieved everything that you might want to achieve, and what happened at the end of it? So, a little intelligence is required, a little thought, and overcoming impiety, the impiety in our heart, yesham tantakatam papam jananam punya karmanam, accumulating some punya karma. So that's what we need to do. And so the question we should be asking ourselves is, how can I achieve that? How can I overcome this enemy in my heart, which has seized various strategic positions? My mind, my intelligence, and my senses have all been seized by the enemy, karma rupena. So now I have to do something about that. Otherwise, it's not going to end well for me. And I'm going to be frustrated, defeated, and disappointed in all my endeavors. I don't want that to happen. So therefore, we need to accumulate the punya. And that's explained how we can do that. By the Srimad Bhagavatam, actually, and engage in pious work. So there are different things. There are two sort of strands to this. Jai Shishi Radha Gokulananda Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Ki Jai. To accumulating piety. One of them is performance of duty. And that's required for conditioned souls. We have to understand what's appropriate for us in our particular position, swadharma, and do it. And do it for Krishna's pleasure. And don't neglect it. And yata pravritir bhutanam. So this is in the 18th chapter. Yenam sarvamidang tatam swakarmana tamabhyacha siddhim vindati manava. Krishna says, just by doing your duty nicely, you can achieve perfection. So, two strands for this is how we accumulate piety. Prabhupada says here, in fact, we were reading in this purport, and this is what I understood it, by strict adherence to the prescribed principles for all orders of social life, one can attain the qualities. He starts off by saying, the entire Vedic way of ritualistic performances is to put every conditioned soul on the path of piety. So the path of piety is Varnashram Dham. And, of course, this day and age, it can't be done perfectly. But it has to be done to some degree, to whatever degree we can manage. Which means doing our duty, which means understanding what our duty is first. And then doing it. And there, Prabhupada says, by strict adherence to this, one can attain the qualities of truthfulness, control of the mind, control of the senses, forbearance, etc., and can be elevated to the plane of rendering pure devotional service to the Lord. So we begin to push back the enemy. And the enemy has seized us and has control of us. And is simply causing us to stay in the material world and suffer immensely, repeatedly, birth after birth, we begin to fight back. So truthfulness, control of the mind, etc. So these are the pious qualities which are required, actually, in order to bring us to the mode of goodness. Because unless we reach the mode of goodness, we can't transcend. We can't take off into transcendence while we're still in tamas and rajas. We must at least come to the mode of goodness, the brahminical stage. So this is helped, this process of doing our prescribed duty. And at the same time, hearing. Hearing about Krishna, just like we're hearing Krishna's pastimes. Krishna comes for all of us. He came 5,000 years ago, but that's fine for us now because he performed these wonderful pastimes that we can still hear about, we can still recite, we can talk about, we can discuss among ourselves. And in this way, that also is the means of acquiring piety. Srimvatam Swakata Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtana. So just this Shravan Kirtan is itself pious activity. We accumulate punya. Put yourself on the tracks of your prescribed duties. Don't deviate. Stay there. And just do this hearing. Don't think that there's something else, that I can be happy falling into this illusion that I am this body. If I can just satisfy my senses in a different way, this is not working right now, but I'll find a, you know, different partner, or, you know, more money, or a better house, or something like that, you know. That's just, you're falling into the illusion. You're letting the enemy take over and, you know, defeat you. So don't let that happen. Stay on the path. And the only way you can really do that is if this punya shravana, is this shrimvatam swakata krishna, this shravanam kirtanam is in place. This has to be there to hear about Krishna. This is really what we don't want to do. Actually, this is the austerity for the mind more than anything. We want to hear about ourselves. We'd like to hear the news. We're quite happy to read Facebook updates all day long, or Twitter, or anything like that. What's going on? What's this one doing? What's that one doing? We're hungry to hear more and more stuff. But to hear Krishna's pastime, to read Krishna book, we're passing out. You know, pick up the Bhagavatam. Oh, I can't read that. It's too much. You know, it's like, it's difficult because we're envious of Krishna. You know, he's the enjoyer and we're not. And that, you know, it's like, so we don't want to hear, but that's what we have to do. And when we do that, and the way we can do that actually nicely is when we come together, we can discuss together and we can delve into these pastimes, delve into the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. And it's so beautiful and it's so attractive and it's so wonderful. And it's, you know, it's what we're looking for. It's the fulfillment of our vision, fulfillment of everything when we do that. So it's simultaneously nice, and it's also accumulating the piety that we require, punya, punya sravana kirtana. By doing that, gradually, nasta prasya abhadrasya nityam bhagavata sevya. Nasta prasya abhadrasya, the abhadra, the unwanted things in the heart, are removed. And it's these unwanted things which are holding us back, which are stopping us from surrendering, from focusing on Krishna. Nasta praisho, but nityam bhagavati, bhagavati uttamashloka, bhaktir bhavati naishtaki. The nishta, gradually we'll come to the nishta stage of being fixed in our bhakti, and then we can go on to greater and greater heights of ecstatic enjoyment, relishing Krishna's pastimes because they're so relishable. And we'll come out of rajas, tadara jastamo bhava, gradually, kama loba dayaschaye. And this enemy, calm, greed, lobha, will be vanquished. Cheta eta anavidim stitam sattve prasid. And we'll come to the sattva platform of goodness, from where we will be able to launch ourselves into the space of Krishna consciousness, which is where we will be happy, where we will be satisfied. So that's the points I'm getting here from this purport. And I'll stop in a second. We can discuss this. Just to wrap it up, Lord Sri Krishna manifested his eternal form before the vision of all on earth performed his disappearance. By removing his form from the sight of those who are unable to see him. So he came, and removing his sight from those who are unable to see him, those who had no attraction, this is what this means, who really weren't able to comprehend his divine and transcendental nature. He disappeared. Of course, those who were able to and were surrendering to him, they always see him. So it's not like he's disappearing from them. Always I'm seen by those who hold me in their hearts. So he only disappeared from those persons who didn't want to see him, so to speak. So he removed his his form, his eternal form, from the vision of such persons. So let us try to get to the position where we are always seeing the Lord by following this process of hearing and chanting and adhering to our God-given duty. So I'll pause there. Thank you for listening. Does anyone have any questions or...